Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge. I'm Joseph Otinos, your host and emotional touchstone. It's a somber mood here in the Lobot Lounge today, as we gather to mourn the death of Cool. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we all have things that we love, things that we adored, pop culture, icons, movies, themes, that we all just thought was special, that thought was ours, that thought that no one else in the world understood. But lo and behold, people started to find out about them. And before we knew it, everyone loved them. They were popular. They were in. They were hot. They were fads. The gentlemen hipsters are here at the Lobot Lounge on a dark, gloomy night to talk about the things that we loved before everyone else did. We were ahead of the curve, folks. We loved them first. Here's Mark Finn.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
Here's Mickey Finn.
I'm so over names. Do we have to use names?
And here's Aaron de Uribe.
A vampire is not a vampire is not a vampire.
So let's open with our first round.
Oh, boy.
I know. It's so hard being us. It's so difficult because we were on the cusp. We knew what was cool before it was cool. We had the touch. We had the power.
We had the vision.
Yes! We did. If I might coin a term, it was proto-cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you. I'm snapping my fingers.
Me too.
I'm growing my beard out as we speak.
Oh my god.
We weren't expecting them to be hidden gems. We didn't even think of them as gems. We just thought they were ours. We had them, and no one else did. What we're talking about, folks, are the themes and movies and maybe even properties that we thought. No one else likes this but me, and I think it's great. But then, everybody started to like them, and we didn't maybe like them as much anymore. What would you say?
Oh, absolutely. No, I mentioned vampires at the beginning of the show, and yes, I am one of those guys that started out loving everything about vampires, growing up on the Hammer horror movies with Christopher Lee. To me, in my mind, Christopher Lee is still the definitive Dracula. One of my favorite movies as a kid was Brides of Dracula. I remember seeing that for the first time when I was very young. Scared the crap out of me. Loved it. I would buy Famous Monsters of Filmland, and I would cut out every single poster of Dracula or vampires that there were and put them up all over my wall. This was long before Anne Rice, long before anything that people even could conceive of a vampire, glittering and shining in the sunlight.
Don't look at me, I'm a monster.
Yes, exactly. I'm hideous.
You're glowing like
but you're sexy.
You came from a rave or something.
Yes.
Just, shut up.
I truly was a goth before there was such a thing. But I wasn't a goth. I didn't dress in black. I didn't wear the black lipstick or anything like that. But I love vampires. Everything about vampires. My mom at some point even, yes, I was a proto-goth. My mom at some point even was like worried. She wanted to take me to talk to somebody in our church because, all these pictures of vampires on the walls. Aaron, what's wrong? And one of the first characters that I would want to dress up as when I was a kid and go and trick-or-treating was Dracula. I always wanted to be a vampire. And then Anne Rice happened. I'm of course not going to blame Anne Rice. I love her books. I love her. I think she's a fantastic writer. She's a wonderful lady. But really, Anne Rice, I think, is where it began.
Yes.
And then suddenly vampires were not the things that I grew up with anymore. They started transforming. There was always a romantic aspect to vampires, starting with Bela Lugosi, actually even going further back with John Polidori's The Vampire, which was based on Lord Byron. And he was a Byronic figure, a figure of mystery and attractive and a nobleman.
Ruthven.
Absolutely. I mean, he was not a bloated corpse that crawled out of the ground and plagued his family. But that was one. It was a very isolated incident. Bela Lugosi came along and played at that time a very romantic, tragic, but a very romantic figure. Women would swoon. So there was the notion. But for the most part, vampires were, you know, there was always a sexuality aspect to it, of course. But vampires were monsters. They were hideous. They were things that would come after you, and you would stake them in their coffins and cut their heads off.
This is not Lucy, the sister you loved. It's only a shell, possessed and corrupted by the evil of Dracula.
Yep, absolutely. And then they became much more romantic, and then they became much more sexy, and then they were like Eurotrash vampires and models and drug addicts, and it was, you know, they looked more like David Bowie and acted like rock stars, and of course now
were rock stars in the Vampire Lestat.
Exactly. Like, and then we won't even. I'm going to stop before I even get to the glittering vampire era of those novels, of the Twilight novels. But I don't like vampires as much anymore. I mean, I there's always a special place in my heart for them, especially the original concept of vampires that I mentioned earlier, which is the bloated corpse digging its way out of the ground and feasting on its family members. That to me is a vampire. And then maybe there's one that's the more romantic figure. But vampires. Yeah. That's mine. You know, I love them.
Ironically, as I'm listening to you and preach it, brother. ironically, it occurs to me, gentlemen, that this is our 25th episode.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Maybe we're having this reflective moment because I don't know. We feel lost in a wave of pop culture that somehow has taken away the things that were glorious and good and treasured for us.
Well, this is it's a double whammy for the people listening because we now have a lot more listeners than we did before. So those of you who are listening now, you can feel the righteous indignation of other people going, I love the Gentleman Nerds, and you can be like, you asshole, I was there on the first episode. They couldn't even talk into the microphone the right way.
Or my favorite, oh yeah, I listened to them from the first episode. Yeah, it was kind of boring. I stopped listening.
Now that everybody likes them, I kind of don't like them.
I have a
historical.
All right, let's hear it.
When Tim Burton's
Don't you dare! That was mine. Go ahead.
No, you want to take it?
No, go ahead. I knew I should have talked to you about this before, because I should have known that you and I were going to pick the
our
same
neural
game.
Link would always
go ahead. Go ahead.
There's bound to be overlap, folks.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. I have another one. I'll,
well, so do I. I got plenty.
I'll let you have Batman. I'll tell you.
Oh no. Oh, my bad. I wasn't going Batman.
All right,
go ahead.
You take Batman, Mark.
Yeah, go Batman.
Well, when Tim Burton's Batman came out in 1989, it was a revolution. And there was such an amount of pomp and circumstance to it, and the pop culture Batman was actively redefined by that film. It was a really interesting thing. And of course, all of the Batman fans who had suffered in silence over the years, because whenever anybody mentions Batman, and to a larger extent, comics, the newspaper and magazine articles would always start out with pow zam, and we knew that wasn't Batman, that wasn't the Batman in the comics, that wasn't the Batman that we loved, that wasn't the Batman that we were reading, that wasn't the Batman that we were into. And so when Tim Burton's Batman came out, we had some problems with it, but it was a quantum leap forward in that it took itself seriously and was gothic and interesting, and it was a take, you know, it was an interpretation that, granted, it didn't come out of our heads, but where it also didn't come out of is the 1966 television show.
Right.
And so we were so excited about that, and there was like about 3 weeks of euphoria in the comic book community, and then it happened. The mass media got a hold of it, and Batmania is back. And the first thing that all of these local stations would show is the line of people at the tattoo parlor going out the door, getting the bat symbol tattooed on their arm. Because I'm a Batman fan, man. I love that Batman. That thing that that guy. I came up with that, you know, Mr. Mom is like Batman, and that's and so that was the point at which Batman lost an awful lot of its cool for me, because you couldn't have a Batman conversation. You could no longer rely on the T-shirt to be a signifier that you could go talk to this guy about comics for 10 minutes. What you were going to get instead was, yeah, man, I love Jack Nicholson movies. I watch all of them. I seen that one where he's like in the diner and he tells that woman to hold it between her legs, man. That's the funniest thing I ever seen, man. I love that movie. What's it called? Something about pieces. Anyways, I like Batman because the Joker's in it. And, you know, that conversation is one that went right down my spine and lodged in the fight or flight reflex. You know, I either wanted to throw a rock at the guy or climb into the tree and scream and warn the others. It was very frustrating. So, that was...
Why would you say that? I mean, and here's my question to all of us, I guess, when we talk about this thing, and I'm going to put myself to the fire as well. What do you think that is about that makes you go...
It is...
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is. It is the dilution of the pure form.
Yes.
That's what it is. You know, in some of this stuff that we speak of here regularly is very strongly flavored, if I can be metaphorical. There is something about the pop culturization of these things that dilutes things out to sort of the lowest common denominator. Things become bullet points instead of nuanced arguments. The highlights are repeated and copied and recopied until they become like a copy of a copy of a copy. And the lowlights and the shadows get lost in that translation. So it's you know, Batman becomes a kind of a lighter fare. And becomes kind of a simple, his parents died, so he fights bad guys. Vampires become shiny and sparkly because they're tragic and sensitive, and pale, which I call, you call tragic and vampiric. I call it British, but there, I digress. Cause they both got bad teeth, folks.
Right.
Anyways.
No, you're absolutely correct.
Does that make sense what I'm saying there?
Yeah,
it does. For me, I think there's a certain level of exhaustion that comes from being a fan and a hardcore fan and a super fan, and nobody else is listening. No one else is listening. But then suddenly everyone says, hey, have you heard about this? And I'm like, yes, no one. But you weren't just, huh?
Yeah.
And I don't want to expend the energy to go through it all again with them because they're wrong. They're just wrong. They're saying, you know, oh, this and that. Here's my fine example. There's an article that came out in The Onion recently that was a mocking kind of an article where it had a guy writing a fake letter to a haunted house, a Halloween haunted house, going, gentlemen, your knowledge of classic horror does not make you qualified to run this haunted house. And it was a comedy bit. But in the comedy bit, he got things wrong. And I was like, I'm actually going to criticize this comedy bit about a comedy bit about criticizing a haunted house because they don't have it right.
Right.
Things like that make the minutia of it, which you mentioned, Mark, I think that it drives me crazy to hear people go, oh, it's a big hit now, and oh, I love this thing, and that part was so-and-so happy. No, you're wrong. That's not it. You're absolutely wrong. Yeah, Toccata, Fugue in D minor was never associated with horror movies until the 1960s. No, you're absolutely wrong. It was in the Raven. It was in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in 1931. What are you crazy?
I'm the same way in the urban fantasy stuff because, you know, after Jim Butcher and
Anita Blake Vampire Hunter.
Yes. After they got all big and everything like that, everybody was like, ooh, this new thing called urban fantasy. And I'm like, Emma Bull, 1990, Cast a Deadly Spell, all this Charles old Delaney. Stuff pre-existed before then. It just took a while to catch on.
Yeah.
And part of what Mark was saying that you know, I think what I react to, and again, this is going to sound a little hypocritical and a little ironic, that I, who encourage people to do, to take a property and to redefine it and to breathe new life into it and to have their interpretation of it, and that's fine. However, it's like you know, the whole diluting. Mark had it correct. Somebody hands me an espresso, and it's a double shot of espresso, and I'm a fan of espresso, and I'm about to drink it, and somebody says, oh, wait, hold on. And they put a little bit of cream in it. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. No, wait. And they pour some honey, and then they put some cinnamon. And then another guy comes up, no, wait. this is the cool, and then he puts a little bit of vanilla in it, and somebody comes and puts some caramel in it, and somebody comes along and says, you know, this is going to be really weird, but trust me, this is the best thing, and he puts a little bit of tomato juice in it. And then they're stirring that up, and some guy, other guy comes along and puts a little bit of paprika, and they're like, taste it. What I am drinking is not espresso.
Yeah. Well,
it has now become something completely different, and I'm okay with that.
To be, that's your point, and to drive home, it's the, what you said about Anne Rice. It was that the Anne Rice vampires took over the conversation.
Right.
And you had a group of people who came in at Anne Rice, and for them, that was their starting place.
Yes.
They weren't necessarily interested in reading 100-year-old vampire treatises and going back and reading Varney the Vampire, which is a terrible read.
You have to meet this friend of mine. He's a huge horror fan. You'd get along. Oh, really?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and you meet them and you're like, oh,
That was one of the brilliance of the design for Vampire the Masquerade, the role-playing game. Was that all the different historical literary vampires and movie vampires were represented as different bloodline clans.
Right.
So you had the Lost Boys.
That was so popular.
You had the Malkavian Crazies.
Was so popular that the clan idea took over.
Yeah.
But then even that, Mickey, even the Vampire the Masquerade game, while, yes, obvious homages, you know, an homage and nods to movies in the past and popular things in the past. They were like, oh, yeah, this game came up with this thing where it's called the Nosferatu clan, you know, and it's like, no, they didn't come up with that. No.
Or the irony of the creator of the Vampire the Masquerade game trying to sue the makers of the Underworld movie.
Oh, right.
Because they ripped them off.
Yeah.
Should note that was one of the two creators. The other guy's a really nice guy.
Right.
Okay. Well, the Anne Rice fans are looking at them saying, what?
Bela Lugosi fans are looking at them and going, what?
Yeah.
Max Schreck's fans are looking at them going, what? Yeah.
And I guess I do appreciate when somebody comes into something. And by the way, which is why when somebody says, oh, I love vampire stories. Really? Which ones do you like? I like Twilight. Rather than react badly to that, I go, oh, well, my gosh, have you read the original Dracula? Have you read George R. R. Martin's Fever Dream? Have you read I Am Legend? Have you read Salem's Lot?
Have you read Dracula?
This is right. The original. I try to introduce that individual because a lot of them genuinely do love the vampires and some of the mythology behind it. So I'm like, let me tell you more about this. Yeah. So it's always me trying to expand somebody's knowledge and somebody's experience of something, because you never know. That person may go, oh my God, I read the original Dracula by Bram Stoker and I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great. And otherwise they never would have had that exposure. If they're just in the Twilight echo chamber, read this, it's just like Twilight. These vampires not only sparkle, but they, you know, rainbows come out of their butts or whatever. Then that's all they'll know.
That's a good point about educating that level. About saying, I say educating, it sounds so haughty, but you know, we are proto cool.
Yes.
But it does. It sounds like, you know, well, that's great, but listen to this. When I was doing the horror hosting thing on Fangoria, and I would meet a lot of fans who'd come up to Professor Griffin and say, oh, great, I'm a horror fan. And then all the new horror and the torture porn stuff that they were big into, I didn't, like, shoo them away and go, get out of here, you heathens. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. I would accept their horror, their loves, and then offer something else. Hey, have you considered this? And I think it's a good exchange of stuff.
Sure.
I think where it hurts, if I may, is when there's something that was so close and near and dear to you that when everyone else loves it, it loses its power. And here's my example.
Yes.
Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
When that film came out and I saw it, it changed everything. I loved that movie.
Me too.
I bought the little soundtrack on cassette and listened to it in my car. I'd sing along to it. But there was no merchandise.
Yes.
None, because they didn't know what to do with it. It was a weird Rankin Bass kind of throwback with music, and it was odd.
It was dark and with gallows humor, man. Such a
it was,
loved that movie.
It was such...
And yet the animation brought you back to those days of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Santa Claus Takes a Holiday.
But I remember, like, you know, knowing so much about the production of that film and you know, there wasn't a whole lot to read about it because the knowledge wasn't spread out, I guess, or as widely distributed as it is now. But, you know, I remember reading, you know, some magazine articles about it saying how Patrick Stewart did the original voice for Santa Claus and then they changed him to the narrator and he did the opening and the closing, but they changed it for the movie. It wasn't the same guy. And I was like, why? Because there's a closing at the end of that soundtrack that Patrick Stewart does. It's beautiful. And I would absolutely love to have that realized and brought back into the theater to have people hear it. People who love that movie so much, you know. Anyway, I digress on that. What I find frustrating is I personally would make my own decorations. I'd make my own Jack and my own Sally, and I would hang them up for Halloween, and I'd make little models of them because there was nothing out there. There was nothing to buy. And then I started seeing it everywhere, and I would, is that a Night Before Christmas pin? Oh, I'll buy that. That's awesome. That's just fringish enough for me to be, yes, I got it. That's lovely. But then there's so much stuff. It is warehouses of Nightmare Before Christmas stuff. Every year, Disneyland changes the Haunted Mansion into the Nightmare Before Christmas. You know, there's Jack and Sally, and they change all the songs, and it's huge, and there's merchandise everywhere, and everyone's a big fan. And I'm not gonna hold that against them. I'm not gonna find it offensive, but I'm not as big a fan as I was then.
Right.
It changed something.
Yeah, it became less special.
It did. It was so special in the beginning. I still love that movie. I still love the music. But, you know, all my Nightmare Before Christmas stuff that I had, the few things that I had a Talking Jack doll that came out, you know, I want to say the mid-90s. It was this little Talking Jack doll. And that was really kind of it.
For once, you had a toy. I can say I had that.
Yay! It came with Zero inside the package. Little Zero.
Nice.
And I gave those away recently. I was like, yeah, I know I had them. I was like, yeah, I got a snow globe and an Ember for Christmas Talking Jack and yeah, whatever. You know, not so much. I don't know. It's strange. I understand, you know, the topic here on 25th episode, but it's making me kind of sad.
Well, no, you're right. I understand because, you know, we've hit a point where people are reaching back now and retro producing stuff that was never intended to be. There's a company called Reaction that makes these 3¾-inch figures in the style of the Star Wars figures. Yep. And where they got it right was in doing the alien figures because Kenner almost did them.
Yeah.
And then somebody watched the movie and went, oh, we can't do that. Well, it's too late. We've already got the alien production. All right, we'll put the alien toy out, but we're going to put the kibosh on the rest of this. And so Reaction kind of picked that up, and you and I both know we all would have bought those figures and just integrated them into the Star Wars narrative, right?
Heck yeah.
Well, then they decided that what we needed to do was Escape from New York, and I thought, oh well, now that's pretty okay. We're right at the wait. You're doing Taxi Driver. Wait, you're doing
Big Trouble in Little China.
You're doing Big Trouble. You're doing Back to the Future. Wait, hold on. By this time, you know, and now there's a line of these figures. Oh, they did a line of these figures for Tomorrowland because that's what the kids were asking for, is 3¾-inch immovable action figures based on a George Clooney Disney flop. That's what they were wanting.
Yeah. Right. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, and so I can't believe those didn't sell.
They did a Universal Monsters series, which ironically Remco already did.
Right, Remco had already done
back in the early 80s.
I know, brother.
It was like, this existed. Why are you doing this? We don't need this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sort of notion that all you've got to do now is buy in at a merchandise level is what turns me off to a lot of this stuff.
And you know what? Maybe that's it. I think you actually hit the nail on the head, Mark. It is the crass commercialization of something that used to be special to us and not a lot of people heard about. It is all the big industries, Hollywood, toy manufacturers, whatever it is, cashing in on what they perceive could even have the slightest chance of being popular and then pushing it in every possible market, every possible outlet to where Yeah, I mean you're on your flight to somewhere, and you open up the in-flight catalog, and there's all your Night Before Christmas, you know, toys in there, and there's all the stuff about what Batman, and here's all the new Justice League stuff, and
I want to film you guys walking into a Hot Topic.
Well, there's some excitement that happens. I can tell you that when I walk into a Hot Topic, I'm like, oh god.
And so there's a certain amount of I'm a fan of Doc Savage. And I really want Shane Black to do his version of Doc Savage. Yes. But there's a small part of me
gonna be everywhere.
That is afraid that now we're going to have the Doc Savage animated series, the Doc Savage TV show, the Doc Savage made directly for DVD.
But do you think if it's done, and here's my hypothetical, do you think, like, say, for example, the people who are huge fans of Guardians of the Galaxy as a comic book property, when it came out in the movies, do you think they were terrified or excited and then became such a big hit and so well done, I would assume that they were like, yes, perfect, wonderful.
Yeah, but there's such a small sampling size. I mean, there were what?
But that's my point. Those guys had the love for that we had the love for vampires or the Nightmare Before Christmas or for Tim Burton's Batman or comic book Batman, and then Tim Burton's Batman came along and ruined it for everyone. But I mean, those six fans that like Guardians of the Galaxy, how are they feeling? Are they upset? Do they not like Guardians of the Galaxy anymore because everyone likes Guardians of the Galaxy now?
They're probably flipped out. Is what, because if you're that deep in, if you're such a Guardians of the Galaxy fan, you are out there where the buses don't run. I mean, let's be honest. The number of people I know who count Star-Lord in their top five Marvel characters, there's probably seven of them. And
now Rocket, on the other hand.
That Rocket Raccoon.
But yeah. I think that your point is well taken, that was absolutely a corruption, but I don't think I here's the difference. Guardians of the Galaxy is real insider baseball. Okay? Mm-hmm. There already was a cultural tradition of vampires going back 100 years in various forms of media.
Yeah. It started the Night Stalker.
But isn't Aaron's example making it seem like insider baseball to him? Like, he loved it before anyone else did. I loved Guardians of the Galaxy before this big movie came out, and they got it wrong. That Star-Lord's gun doesn't shoot this like that. It shoots different.
Yeah.
You know what? I would guess that, 100 years from now, there's still Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and they're very different. Mm-hmm. There's Guardians of the Galaxy Babies TV show, and I think once it gets to that level, another example, another thing that I loved when I was a kid, and it's kind of been ruined for me a little bit, is Victoriana. I've been a fan of the Victorian period, and particularly the literary sci-fi supernatural Victorian period, since I could remember. I started reading Edgar Rice Burroughs, it's set around that time. I read the Jules Verne works, and so I was set. I loved Disney's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Again, and not to say there weren't any fans of it, there were. But now, and you could find groups that loved Victoriana, but you'd have to scour those Usenet groups and the forums, and here's a group right here that has 90 members, and they all love Victorian stuff. And now steampunk. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Everyone loves it. They try to shove it into everything.
Put some goggles on it.
Gears on a top hat is your steampunk starter kit. Yeah.
And so a little bit of that magic has been lost. When I think steampunk, and then I go into the store and I see the crass commercialization of Victoriana sci-fi and supernatural. It loses a little bit of that appeal to me. I ran a Victorian horror game for many, many years. I loved it. It was fantastic. My players loved it. It really immersed them.
The Call of Cthulhu?
We actually used the Call of Cthulhu system. Yep. And it was fantastic. Everyone had a great time. But then suddenly now it's like there's so much of that out there. There's so much of it out there that my campaign and my memories and my love of that became less special. And again, I do sound like a special snowflake that's saying, this is my fandom, it's mine. Yes. And so I hate that part about it, but that's the reality.
I'm actually coming at it from a different angle.
All right.
I am for those of you just turning in, I am probably the most generic pop person on this podcast. Several things I've mentioned in the past have the guys rolling their eyes going, I can't believe you like that. I come from the standpoint of I like to mix and match. So therefore, when you dilute that espresso, it's all about what the final product is. So from the steampunk aspect, I get annoyed that people slap gears on things that don't do anything. You know,
right.
Why does your head have gears?
Yeah,
what does
exactly.
it do?
I mean
exactly.
It doesn't actually physically
gears
have
to become rhinestones.
But when it's obviously
basically.
Not connected to anything and it's just a gear.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's interlock them, even if they don't move. Do something with them.
Right.
But the amount of stuff that's out there like that also means that there are people doing some really cool stuff that they wouldn't have been doing before, and you get those combinations.
Now, that's
it's
absolutely
like
yeah, sure.
There's
that's
a lot of
the
stuff
trade-off.
That tastes bad in experimentation.
Yep. No, absolutely. That is the trade-off. You can go online, and you can look up steampunk mod Nerf guns.
Gorgeous.
And
oh.
you will see true artistry,
yeah.
folks.
Yeah.
You will see some of the most amazing modded out Nerf guns that look like they came straight out of a Jules Verne novel.
A lot of copper and brass spray paint.
I know, but you know what? But they're beautiful works of art,
yeah.
or goggles of various kinds, or you know. So yes, actually, you're right, Mickey, and I should say that if it gives people something to express themselves creatively, artistically. I'm all for it. I'm all for it, and I want more of that.
And then we get stuff like our engineer in the new Ghostbusters movie, which isn't quite steampunk, but very heavily influenced by steampunk, and she's awesome.
Yes, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And Mickey, what about Mickey, do you have one of those properties that you loved before anyone else did, and that you see it now getting popular, and that makes you sad in some way?
Actually, I had not the sad, but I had the reaction that everybody else did back when Evercrack started getting popular.
Okay.
I'm unfamiliar with
EverQuest.
EverQuest.
Oh, EverQuest.
Yeah, pre-World of Warcraft.
Right? MMOs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Before
okay.
World of Warcraft.
Got it.
And I still do this thing called mushing. And
I was going to say, give us your background on that, Mickey, because there's a reason why you roll your eyes at MMOs, because you were in the proto-MMOs
right. And I
called
don't roll my eyes. I like several of them. I like Star Wars Galaxies. I liked WoW, etc. It just took me a while to get into it. I think it was actually Star Wars that got me into it. But back in college, working in a computer lab, somebody, I don't remember who it was, introduced me to something called a MUD, which is essentially like the old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy games and all the text-based games where, you know, you have been...
And remind us what MUD stands for.
Multi-User Dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Basically an MMO before there was an MMO,
right,
and it's
but
all text-based.
Text.
Is that like a choose-your-own-adventure kind
yeah.
of thing?
Essentially, except you're interacting with other people.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
but it's all text-based. They're typing stuff.
I see.
And there are systems that, you know, you build a bunny rabbit to kill somebody because they're level one, and the person actually fights it. You hit the button to kill it, and it does it. Or you get killed by it.
Right. There's an actual engine that's figuring out
right.
how well you do combat or if you're successful with a skill
okay.
or whatever.
Strangely, it was very social. There was a popular one out of Texas A&M called Darker Realms.
Mm-hmm.
And every 2 weeks, there'd be a party either in Denton, which is outside of Dallas, mm-hmm. or in A&M, where a ton of the players lived in both, not everybody, but people would, like, travel. We had people traveling from, like, Washington State to come to some of these parties. It was a very social thing. And then I got sidetracked by something called a MUSH, which is a multi-user shared hallucination, which is more like what Vampire the Masquerade is to Dungeons & Dragons. It's very story-driven. It's very character-driven.
Okay.
And most of the stuff you're typing is that way. Well, and then Evercrack started coming out. And
you've got to call it EverQuest because you're confusing people.
Yeah, sorry. EverQuest.
EverQuest.
And I was like, there's no story here. It's just going around and killing things and getting killed by other people. And then eventually stories got added in and I got into it and all that stuff like that. But for about 2 or 3 years, all my friends at the help desk were into this. And I'd go to lunch with them, and that's all I would hear about. I was like Jane Goodall with monkeys. I knew more.
Nice.
I have never seriously played that game, and I know all the ins and outs because I had all these friends who were, like, really into it and would talk about it constantly.
Yeah.
So I have felt exactly what you guys are talking about.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by the way, that's part of what I'm talking about with the forums. I mean, I remember when I was into Victoriana, and this was in the very early days of the internet, where you would look at different news groups and forums and things like that. The internet was mainly text. And you would find groups where people would get in and start talking about their love of Victorian sci-fi novels or Victorian supernatural novels. And they would have lists of, you know, oh, you're going to watch this movie set in the Victorian period or this movie about, you know, Sherlock Holmes. And of course that all the Sherlock Holmes people would go to visit that site as well because they were all fans of Sherlock Holmes and the stories are of course set during that period. And so again, there was this feeling of a community. Whereas, like you said, Mark, is like now I may be walking through a convention hall and I see somebody with a top hat and goggles. And I'd go up and say, hey, you know, let's start talking about Victoriana. And their knowledge of it may be very scant.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, all they know is, I like this top hat. I like these goggles. I bought them at that vendor over there. I like this waistcoat. I like the style. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fantastic.
There's some hot chick dressed up in a steampunk outfit that he's like, I'm going to get with that. So what? how do I dress like this?
Exactly.
Put this stupid shit on? Okay.
So, and that's fine. And by the way, girls look amazing when they wear that type of
corset,
costume.
Corset.
Beautiful, beautiful costumes out there. But it is, I can't just, that's not no longer a way for me to identify somebody who shares something in common interest-wise and
right.
You know, source material-wise with me.
Now,
it may be somebody that just bought a cool brown top hat with
I even bump up against it accidentally when like somebody goes, so do you like anime? And I'm like, well, all the titles you know, I don't. All the titles I like, you don't. Because I was into it in the 90s. I was, you know, one of the staff heads for Project Akon for forever. But now, you know, it's I know Attack on Titan and Full Metal Alchemist and Cowboy Bebop, and that's it.
Yeah. And by the way, I've been on the receiving end of this. I've been on the receiving end of exactly what we're talking about. At a convention, I mentioned something about one of the recent Doctor Who episodes that I'd seen with David Tennant. And this bright-eyed, you know, very animated young man walked up to me and said, a Doctor Who fan! And oh, yes, and we started talking. And when he discovered that I had seen very little of the original Doctor Who, there was a little bit of that turning up of the nose.
Was this in Dallas?
Where was this at? I want to say it was at an anime fest or something like that. And I think it was at Akon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Dallas is going to have more of that because they're the ones who really started the British invasion of the old shows back in the 70s.
As a matter of fact,
one of the gentlemen who did that is, who still works for PBS, winds up at, WhoFest every year. He's awesome. If you have any interest in radio, television, film, he's just an awesome panelist.
I want to bring up something here because now that we're actually discussing, now that we're on this end of it, for our listeners, I think it's important for you guys to understand we are owning this.
You
understand? This is when we encounter this, it is our problem, not their problem.
Correct.
Absolutely.
And that's important.
We're not bitching.
I think Joseph's reaction and I think Aaron's reaction is the right way to go about this. If you encounter this in your travels, the reaction is not to roll your eyes and go, "Well, only a real fan is blah 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 blah." No, I think the right way to do it is to go, oh, cool, well, have you seen such and such? But if you haven't seen that, that's really good. And you get their reactions. Turn it on them. You know, make it a teaching moment.
Never tell somebody they're not fan enough to like something.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, because a fansplaining is just as annoying as every other type of splaining.
But, gentlemen, I am so guilty about this. My ex-wife would tell you this and laugh about it now, but I get teachy. I become Professor Griffin without the funny nails and the funny voice, but I do get teachers.
You do, I've seen it. You
know, where someone says, yeah, Frankenstein, and I want to go, Frankenstein's monster, Frankenstein's monster. I will do that. I will correct people in public, and they're like, oh, God, don't do that. Don't be that
guy. He's Frankenstein Jr.
You know, actually, it's
it's his son.
Well, actually, yeah, exactly. Well,
you know,
actually.
That phrase, well, actually, should never be uttered by anyone who with a modicum of knowledge of any of this pop culture shit,
right.
Because it's gonna end badly.
Yes.
It's gonna end
and
badly.
Then there should be a cow.
And by the way, and you can gauge interest, at least I can, pretty quickly. If I start talking about something that I think somebody might enjoy hearing or benefit from, if they start turning it, what is that?
Yeah.
And they're engaging me, great, I'll continue to talk about it. If I mention something and they're like, oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then look away, oh, well, that person does not want to know about Victoriana.
But if I see somebody being lauded and praised for their knowledge of something and I go and talk to them and they don't have the knowledge that I have, part of me wants to just shout to everyone in the room going, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, everyone. I know it's horrible. It's selfish.
There's a way to bring it up without calling attention to that guy, you know? And the way to do it is to bring up something along a parallel line and throw it back at him. And when they go, no, I haven't heard about this, you go, oh, well, here's what it is. And then, you know, there's ways of doing that. But if you're not conversationally adroit enough, my friendly listeners, just feel, don't feel obliged to correct. You know, if you have limited knowledge but you're talking to somebody that's only read Twilight, it's absolutely okay to go, hey, have you seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer? Well, that's what got me into vampires. I really like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And that's okay, you know, because you guys can discover stuff together that you wouldn't.
Because then you're sharing. You're not instructing. Right. You're sharing.
Right. And it's no point. There's no point to be selfish about it. And that's the part that bothers me that I need to get better about.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like I'm being selfish. Oh, that was mine. You know, no, that's a horrible thing to do. And like you said, we own it, and I know that it's something that annoys us all to a certain level, but we're not going to be mean people about it. We're not going to go out and poop on someone else's idea of what was good. Fine example, my son seeing Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Crystal Skull, or whatever the hell that movie was called. We walked out of that theater going, well, that was not very good. But my son was in love with it. He thought, oh, my God, that was amazing, Indiana Jones and the big screen and the swinging of the skull and the Russians and the aliens. And we weren't going to pop his bubble. We weren't going to go, well, that sucks, son. You're an idiot.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, so he's the perfect age for how silly that movie was.
But that was something that he saw, his first Indiana Jones on the big screen. And I remember how I felt, you know, so why ruin it for him?
Yeah.
So while we all know that it wasn't as good, it wasn't for us. It wasn't ours. The Phantom Menace wasn't for us.
Right.
The Attack of the Clones, those movies, I mean, we had our shot, right? We could still enjoy it.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to walk out of here going, you know, well, I hate everything new. Everything new sucks. The classics are the best. I'm only going to watch 1931's Dracula, nothing else.
Well, because just as soon, you know, I like that stuff that hits that outlier category, you know. I can still be surprised by that kind of stuff and look for it, frankly. To me, it's one of the nice things about having a deep reservoir of knowledge is you've got a lot of notches on your yardstick.
Mm-hmm,
and it's very easy to look at something coming out of the chute, tipping a yardstick up and go, oh, I know what this is. And knowing what this is ahead of time, I don't have to watch it. What I'm going to wait for is stuff like, you know, let the right one in, you know, and go, wow, that's okay, cool. I had no idea what this is, you know.
Right.
So
what we do in the shadows.
What we do in the shadows is another really good example of an outlier. So.
But even then, they had enough homages in that film to classic horror but acknowledging, like, the Lost Boys reference that they did. They acknowledged it, and they played with it.
Yeah.
What annoys me with, like, American Horror Story that I'm now in season 6 or watching season 6, they have so many calls to different horror movies of the past, even down to setup, even down to music, even down to theme. And I'm like, oh, that's The Hunger. Oh, well, that's Texas Chainsaw. Oh, there's Blair Witch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so obvious. But then what I hope that people realize, and I don't know, I can't go into everyone's house and educate them all. You know, what you're seeing here is an actual reference to a horror film from 1967. I can't be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. But what annoys me is people go, oh, these creators are brilliant. their American Horror Story, that scene where they did that, I'm like, they didn't do that. That wasn't them. They took it from something else.
However, that said, the way that they're integrating everything in season six is its own form of brilliance.
I will tell you, Joseph, that you need not worry about that. The internet has got you covered.
Do they?
We could. There was not. I mean, from the first episode of True Detective, there were nascent and elder Lovecraftians online trumpeting to the heavens that the whole thing is a derivative mess and should be avoided. And so,
there will always be, now that is true, no, it doesn't matter what it is, there will always be people who point to something and say, they did it first. Right. And of course, there will always be somebody that did it first, right. And we're talking about a narrative.
And good,
story.
And it's good that somebody knows that this other person did it first.
Yeah.
Because if they don't bring it up again, if it never shows up again, it's going to be lost in history, because we're not getting any younger. We have to reintroduce it to a new generation. I have accepted and I'm okay with that. But me personally, in my dark little Lobot lounge here with my three friends drinking, sadly, on our 25th anniversary, it annoys me.
Well,
I can't help it.
I think the secret to this is, because we've just now gone back through, we've taken the circle to where we got on, you know, and the solution to this is very simple. And I will invoke the Will Wheaton on this, and that's don't be a dick. You know, there's, you know, it's going to bother me. It will always bother me when I run into people who profess to be the greatest fans in the whole world of something and they're not deeply read. Their lack of knowledge is not their problem. It's mine. And all I can control is my reaction to that. And being the guy online that's ruining True Detective for everybody is not who I want to be. That said, Joseph, I think we have an obligation as lay scholars to share this information and sure. do it in a teachy way, in a pleasant way, in a way that doesn't offend. I think the secret is not to overshare.
That's true. Or by the way, also a lot of great conversations have come from me asking somebody, what interests you about this? How did you get involved in this?
Yeah, right.
The moment you get them talking about, a friend of mine started wearing these corsets and these great lacy collars and, you know, the stuff that they would wear. I just love how it looks. And I just go from there. I'm like, oh, really? Yeah. So have you looked into other aspects of Victorian culture? Yeah, yeah. I'm reading a lot about all the teas that they would drink back then and these little tea ceremonies they'd have. And I'm like, I often find myself delighted. I'm like, that's wonderful. That one thing that was just a costume led them to look more into this and to more into that and to more into that. And so they are educating themselves. And then if you can, point them in the right direction. Yeah. Well, you should read these books, or you should read this stuff, or you should watch these movies, or whatever it is.
And also, just on a personal level, my hands, it's amazing. I can, you know, write my signature or put food in my mouth. I suck at physical manipulation with my hands. Anybody who's able to put together a costume like that, I'm just in awe.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Prop makers.
Right. That's where we get back to the Nerf guns. You have to admire the artistry that goes into whatever it is, costume making, prop making.
Right.
It's amazing. It, you know, that somebody cares enough to invest that kind of time and that kind of effort. But
that's a different
the bottom line.
That's a different expression of fandom. It's not a way I would express my love of something, but it's absolutely just as valid as anybody
just
else.
Just as valid. Yeah.
But it's true what Joseph said when they say, "Oh, I love vampires," and you go, "Really? So what vampires things are?" So Twilight novels. There's still that moment where I go, "Huh?" Yeah. You know, and I'm just like.
But here's the thing, also to remember, friends. Is that it won't ever take away our love of it. It won't ever take away our knowledge, and it won't ever take away those special moments when you thought it was just me and Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas. It's never going to go away. It was just I'm the only person, I'm the only fan in the world of this thing. I know I am. Nobody else likes this, but I really, 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 really like this. But I'll always have that. I'll always go back
absolutely.
To it. And if I may, I think it's relevant because it kind of hits along the same notes. And I asked old Jack, do you remember the night when the sky was so dark and the moon shone so bright? When a million small children pretending to sleep nearly didn't have Christmas at all, so to speak? And would, if you could, turn that mighty clock back to that long, faithful night? Now think carefully, Jack. Would you do the whole thing all over again, knowing what you know now, knowing what you knew then? And he smiled like the old pumpkin king that I knew, and asked very softly of me, wouldn't you?
Nice.
Beautiful.
Think it works?
Oh, no, absolutely.
Doesn't change a thing. Our past is our past, and we love it. Yeah. We love it, and absolutely, we'd do it all again, regardless of whether or not it's going to be taken over by the masses.
Right, and that's inevitable. The society we live in is all about trying to find a way to profitize everything. It doesn't matter what it is, somebody's going to try to find a way to make a nickel, and that's fine because that partially that keeps whatever it is that we love alive. I certainly would not want there to be no vampire movies. That would suck. I don't want there to be no Doc Savage movie. No, I very much want a Doc Savage movie.
I've just kind of hit my limit of Funko, taking everything pop culturally significant from the last 50 years, whether it was necessary or not, and squatting down over culture and extruding this plastic dump in the shape.
Here I am, finally buying Funko characters.
Oh.
I've ignored them for years. And
the little pop little guy?
Yes, yeah. With the big head. Yeah.
That's kudzu, I swear.
I'm actually thinking about getting the Elvira one just because I find it so charming. I love Elvira.
I have avoided buying the Jason one just because like Mark says, I walk into Dragon's Lair here in Austin and there's a wall from ceiling to floor of every... They have a friggin' Stranger Things version where they have the kids from Stranger Things. Yeah. And I'm like, how did you guys do this? Like, how did you do this so quickly?
That's the part of that I find very disingenuous. And this notion that you're basically selling somebody the same doll with a different paint job. And it's something that's
Okay. Well, case in point, then when I was saying I'm finally buying the dolls, I'm actually buying the few that don't fit that mold.
Oh, that's obviously, the Cthulhu and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, Alien Queen.
Right,
and Tulip
right.
from Preacher that's coming out soon.
I think Ant-Man is different because of the helmet. It's got different pipes, piping on it and stuff.
I don't have any of the Doctor Who's. I don't have any of the other
stuff. I just know in my heart that the 13 people on the planet who are big enough fans of Breaking Bad – probably looked at those action figures and said, well, I know I'm a fan of this, but I don't know if I need to be this much of a fan of it.
Right. Do they have a Funko Pop fly from that Breaking Bad episode? Because at that point, we're done.
Those guys jumped the shark. They came out jumping the shark.
Actually, you know those big sets that they have, the vehicle in one of them? Do they have the Fonz jumping a shark as a set?
I think it's
I would doubt it if somewhere it's out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gotta be. It's gotta be.
And then ironically, if somebody announced that they were doing a re-release and update of all the old Aurora monster kits, I would go out and buy every single goddamn one.
I just bought the monogram re-release of the creature set. I just bought it.
Yeah.
My plan is to have a model party and to invite my friends over to pick a model.
You know, when you were younger, you meant something
that's
completely
brilliant.
Different
there.
By a model party.
Yes, well, that's the come on's going to be, hey, model party. Maybe the invite will have some sexy girls. But you get there, and there's a big table with a sheet over it, and we yank the sheet off, and it's covered in models in boxes with paints and stuff.
Oh,
and pick your model, sit down, let's work on it, we'll spend the day, take it with you when you're done.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I want to do that so bad.
It's like Build-A-Bear.
Why aren't there more? Right. It's like Build-A-Bear for geeks. Why don't they do? People need to do more stuff. Okay, listeners, if you guys are out there, please, please encourage. Let this become a thing. Let us take Joseph's idea of a model building party, and that is a reason for you to get together with your friends and loved ones. Go out and buy these model kits of whatever, spacecraft, monsters, whatever you love, and get together one afternoon at somebody's house, or a bunch of pizza, put on some movies that everybody's seen many times in the background, or some cool soundtracks or movie scores, and build and paint models. I want to be doing that right now.
But don't hand it to me, because if you do, it'll come out looking like a tumbleweed.
No. Mickey's job will be to go around asking people if they would like refills.
Right. Well,
you need martini?
On their drink. Yes, yeah. Would you like some martini?
Hey, don't drink that. That's paint water.
I hate to say this. Speaking of refills, Maximilian has just entered the room.
Uh-oh.
I hate that guy.
I don't think he's happy that we're in here. Okay, so I'm afraid we're going to have to start wrapping this one up.
Wait, before we do.
Yes.
We have a contest.
Oh, yes, we do.
We do. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our 25th episode. And by the end of it, of course, I feel pretty good about the world. So I'm a little happier than I was when I got here.
I now love vampires again.
Me too. I'm a big fan of the Nightmare Before Christmas. I might just listen to the soundtrack tonight.
It's okay to love vampires.
Can still go to hell. All of you brown coats can still go to hell and die. The show is over. They're not doing it. They're not coming back. Let it die.
Wow.
But other than that, I'm in a good place.
Yeah. Please send all hate mail care of Mark Finn.
But do send the happy mail to the Gentleman Nerds. If you haven't already, join us in the Lobot Lounge on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. Just look up the Lobot Lounge. Join us. We're going to have a contest, a wonderful contest, where we have a robotic mascot, a really wonderful-looking do we call him steampunk?
What, oh, God.
No.
Yes, we have to. No, we have embraced steampunk now, folks. So, okay. Yes, go ahead.
He's a very steampunkish-looking robot that's a great mascot for us, but the poor thing has no name, and we feel kind of bad about that.
Yeah. We tried to give him a name, but we couldn't decide on anything.
Because, you know, Proto Mickey Finn was like, well, actually, that name came from, and we're like, you know, forget it. So
now, name it, you know, Robot McRobot Face, you know.
Well, we
can promise you right now that any Robot McRobot Face is going to be immediately discarded.
Here's what you're going to do. You guys are going to get on to, we're going to create a thread, and you're going to reply in the thread and give us your suggestion for what the robot name is going to be. And we will pick the best robot name out of all the suggestions.
Yep.
And officially brand our mascot to your name.
Yes.
The name that you come up with, and you can brag to your friends and family that you supplied the mascot name for the Gentleman Nerds.
Yep. Enter as often as you wish. Give us as many suggestions as you want. There's not a limit. We will pick the one we love most, and that will be the official name of the Gentleman Nerds mascot.
And please feel free, if you have several, to put them in the same
right.
So there's not like 6,000 posts.
Yes. Include all your suggestions in the same post.
But that's not all, folks. As a thank you for naming our robot, we have a fabulous prize package.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yes, that we are going to send you. That is going to be chock full of Gentleman Nerds goodness. What's in it? I can't tell you. It's super secret, but
it's a mystery box.
But it is fabulous, and you will dig it. So,
and it's not a no prize, folks.
No.
There is actual something.
It is an actual prize, but again, it's a mystery box.
That's right.
You can open it and see what wonders lie inside.
If you're video inclined, you could certainly take a video of you unboxing your prize.
Oh yes, and then send it to it. We'll post it
on the page. But that's how we're going to do this, okay? And we will announce on a future episode of the Gentleman Nerds who the winner is. So everybody, stay tuned.
Yep.
So jump onto that Facebook page. We'll have all the rules and the postings on it, and the amount of time we're going to run this contest. But good luck. Help us. Help you. We need a name for our awesome robot head.
Yeah,
designed by Michelle Fitzpatrick.
There you go.
And designed by the incredibly talented,
the lovely and talented Michelle Fitzpatrick. She has done an outstanding job.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of yet another broadcast here from the Lobot Lounge. We like all things cool and uncool, proto and modern. And once again, the world is a happy place. Mark Finn.
Hey, thanks for sticking around for 25 episodes. We hope to see you for the next 25.
Into that. Mickey Finn.
I'm back to liking names again.
Lovely. And Aaron DiOrive.
Yes, echoing Mark, thank you so much, guys, for listening to our podcast. We hope to bring you many, many, many more with lots of great topics. And by the way, despite the ranting on this episode, love what you love, but always be open to learning about new stuff. But love what you love. Make no apologies for it.
That's right. And I'm Joseph Fotinos, reminding you all that it's Frankenstein's monster, not Frankenstein.
Own it.
Frankenstein was the doctor, the monster, different.
Own that.
And, of course, Red Skull lives.
Nice. I almost leaned over and said, it's Frankenstein.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by viewers like you.
And that's where we lost a step as a country.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
And I blame...